Today we are pleased to welcome painter Eric Sandberg and Kristen Heilman, assistant curator at the Hirshhorn Museum and Sculpture Garden. Kristen will be talking with Eric today about his current exhibition, Contrary, now on view at Connor Contemporary Art.
Hi, Eric.
Hi, Kristen.
So this recent series of works are inspired by the ideas of vices and virtues, right?
Loosely, yeah. I mean, some of them I am taking a lot more inspiration from vice and virtue. Some of them I'm just having my own fun with it. So,
So which vices and virtues are represented, or what ideas are represented in the works?
I kind of picked the ones that are kind of most important to me. Not that they're the most important vices because I like to commit them, but maybe I'm most guilty of them. I'm not religious. I just want to say that right up front.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really that. Because I chose, you know, courage and cowardice because I kind of look at myself as being a big coward most of the time. Truth and deceit. Not that I lie. And I try to always tell the truth, even if it hurts people. And I do that a lot, I think. Not intentionally. Charity and avarice are the last ones. And I just, it's more of, I'm not very charitable and I'm not that greedy, but it's just things I don't like in other people.
Mm-hmm.
The avarice ends of things. And,
well, so, I mean, as you're describing them initially, I'm hearing you talk a lot about how the ideas relate to you personally, or, but the idea of vices and virtues are connected to the Christian church, the early Christian church, right?
Okay.
And so I'm wondering, I mean, I guess it does sound like you feel they're still relevant to society at large today. Is it a concept that's still useful?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, I'm not a religious person, but I mean, if you look at any religion out there, they all have virtues and vices that they tell everybody to follow and be aware of. I love a lot of the Christian iconography because, well, I mean, a lot of any religious iconography, I mean, Hindu stuff, it's just crazy. I love it for that, too, but it's just filled with such kind of surreal imagery, things that don't happen. It's just kind of weird. Just making this whole language out of these images, I mean, it's not really lost art. I just don't think people consider it. They just see something figurative and they say, hey, I don't, it's just old school stuff and I don't want to look at it. So I think it is pertinent to what we do today. I don't know, I listen to bad conservative radio shows, not that I agree with them, I just do, because it's fun to hear the horrible viewpoints sometimes of the extreme right people.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think, okay, well, there's, you know, like atheists have no kind of morals, like there's no moral guide for them if they don't have religion, they're crazy people, and I think that's ridiculous, so. I think the vices and virtues, you can take them out of a religious context and they're still, you know, you can put them into Grimm's fairy tales, you can put them into anything, and virtues are virtues and vices are vices. They can bring you down or they can make you better.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always kind of thrown that idea into my artwork. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's interesting to hear you say that, you know, aside from the content, or I guess this is really iconography being a way to wed form and content, choosing symbols that mean something, and constructing an image with those symbols. And I think, the symbols that you've used in the work are really intriguing, but they're very mysterious too, and it might help people who are seeing the works to know whether you're drawing from pre-established iconography, things that do typically resent these six vices and virtues, or is it your own personal symbol system?
Some of them are my own personal symbols, and some of them I'm extracting from, you know, traditional ones. I think like the courage one, you know, that was such a long image going. It just took a while to make that, but I didn't intend it, but over time it just kind of became like Donatello's David.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's always kind of been a symbol of strength, of courage. You know, the David conquering, you know, this mythological, I'm sorry, I don't buy into it at all. But, it's you always see that image. And the sword, the severed head, all that good stuff, it's been done so many times. I'm throwing in a rabbit mask because it's trying, I'm trying to allude to the other side, the coward side of it, because I don't know. I guess I find too many times that aggressors are, you know, deep down they're kind of cowards. It's easier to fight than it is to kind of talk things out and be diplomatic about things. So that's why the cowardice on the other side, it's his head on the courage side that's been severed. So.
Mm-hmm.
I also, you know, I think, you know, I had some lecture I was doing for one of my students one time, and I was talking about just cowardice in general, that, you know, all through history, cowards are masked. They hide their identity because they don't want to be seen. You know, the Ku Klux Klan, you know, terrorists nowadays. I had some other good example. I showed them. I can't remember now, but, you know, just all these masked people that they think they're righteous. They're doing these great things in their mind, but they're not brave enough to actually let us know who they are. So that's why, you know, I have the mask on that one. Some of the truth one, the bird tied to her tongue, I just kind of extending the metaphor if all her words are truth. I was actually going to have it be a dove, but mm-hmm. I don't like drawing and painting doves, and I thought it'd be a little, I mean, I think just kind of, well, instead of making it the dove, which would be the Holy Spirit kind of idea, which I don't care about, I just thought instead I'd make it a bird that a lot of people don't like. I like starlings for some reason. I just thought mm-hmm. it's an ugly bird, but it's pretty at the same time. It's awkward looking. So, you know, I'm here and there, I'm throwing in my own stuff.
Well, I mean to sort of probe that symbol a little bit further,
mm-hmm.
The bird is sort of attached to the figure's tongue with a, like a ribbon, mm-hmm. and it's nailed into her tongue, is that?
It's a tongue stud, I guess.
Tongue stud. Because it just struck me that it seems like the figure is some way, or there's some sort of violence done to that figure, or there's possibility of pain. I mean, see, I guess what I'm getting at is that even your virtues
mm-hmm.
seem to have some sort of intensity to the image that doesn't make them like sweet, easy pictures.
Yeah.
So are you sort of suggesting that there's a challenge to assert these virtues in our
yeah,
world?
Definitely, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to be, you know, abusive and curt with people. It's much easier to be greedy than it is to be charitable. I mean, it's generally just, it's easier to be lazy than to do an honest day's work, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, I don't even believe in a heaven or hell. I don't care about all that stuff. It's just, while we're here, why not, you know, try to do the best you can.
Yeah, but it seems like your images imply that there can be both a heaven and hell on earth.
So. Oh, definitely. I think, you know, long time ago I realized people are the ugliest things on this planet, so I've always done that. I think though, I'm with the small painting, the channel back here, that's kind of where these came from. Whether the ideas in that are where it's kind of where these are kind of birthed, because I've always been kind of playing with the idea of like pretty figures, pretty people, and ugly figures. And I read something. I was for this class, and I guess I just never consciously made the connection until I started doing it in my own work, and then I read it. But generally, vices and virtues and iconology, they kind of, the virtues are generally, well, in Cesare Ripa's iconologia, he always says that virtues are beautiful, are pretty people, and that the vices are generally ugly people. And I like that. I mean, there's so many things about, you know, religion in general that I like, because so much of it's ugly. Like, oh, if the ideas of it are ugly. Like, oh, if you're an ugly person, you're not as virtuous as a pretty person. And mm-hmm. I like that. So with that painting, I started kind of really playing with the idea of the pretty versus the ugly. And they're not really, but for me, they're not really, none of them are any better than, you know, the rest of them. I actually want people to have sympathy for the ugly people,
mm-hmm.
for once.
Well, for you, I mean, what makes a figure ugly? Because it's, at least in terms of the way that you paint, I mean, there's a sort of, I mean, you're a very masterful painter, and you you deal with the human figure in a, you know, an incredibly enticing way. So.
Well, I'm mainly, and it's kind of just a short way to say it, and it sounds awful, but I don't mean it really that way, but the ugly, I guess, would be, you know, deformities, you know, older people, ill people, you know, things that, you know, I don't think it's just pretty people that avoid it. I mean, I think if you're walking down the street and you see somebody coughing up a lung and they're covered in weird spots or something, you want to avoid them. You know, I mean, not everybody goes to reach out to them.
Right.
We generally go, ooh, that's a little off-putting, and we want to avoid it.
And those, I mean, those are preconceptions that,
exactly.
That, as you're talking about religion, is yeah. Helped establish.
Yeah, definitely. And but I mean, and that's not to say that there are. I mean, I don't run into them all the time because I don't get out to meet enough people. But I'm sure there are plenty of people out there that are just all-encompassing, charitable people that they stop and help anything, anybody, and, you know. Yeah, so I'm making kind of generalizations about the ugly side of life, really, mm-hmm. Which I think there's just too much of. So.
Well, how about...
the ugly inside and the ugly outside, that's what I don't like. Because most of my pretty people are ugly on the inside. That's why that's why I like them.
Well, so, I mean, extending this question out further, does the male versus the female body sort of play into... beauty or not, beauty or ugliness or virtue or vice?
Yeah, I mean, no offense. I mean, I generally find the male form just much less appealing. I mean, it's, if you're just looking at it in compositional terms, it's not as aesthetically pleasing, but it can be. I mean, there are obviously male figures that are. I like the one out of these, the cowardice image. I like that. Not just because it was I used myself for it, but you know, that kind of figure I like because I actually that one feels like it's this weird amalgam of like of me, my friend Pat, and my dad. It's like all of us put together, which is really strange to say, but for me, it evokes the most sympathy. He's my favorite figure out of the bunch.
Mm. Is that we should say it's the only male figure
it
out
is,
of the,
yeah.
the six represented? But I mean, are you when you say it's a composite image, is it just physically
not
a composite?
No, for me, just like emotionally, it is because he and my dad has Kennedy's disease, which is this weird thing that afflicts his hands. So I mean, kind of the shortening of the limbs for me represents that. I mean, I didn't want to do it exactly, but I you know becoming unable to. Function with the arms that comes from my dad. I think I actually used Pat for the masked figure on the side of Courage. I used his head, just his size. I think I don't know. I think Pat's size can be off-putting. He's a big guy, my friend Pat. But you know he's one of the nicest guys I know. And then using myself for just for the basics of it. I don't know.
But I mean, is there something that you? I mean, do you associate cowardice with?
With them? No, that's me. That's all me.
I mean, I guess I see artists who sort of take the risk mm-hmm. of putting their work out in front of the public
yeah.
to have them judge and respond to it. I mean, I think that's a very courageous thing to do. So I'm kind of curious.
It
why.
Is, but I think if you talk to enough of them, if you're around them enough, that you realize that. They're afraid. They don't. They may not say it. They're worried about their shows. They don't know if it's going to be good. And, they don't know when they're going to get paid next. They don't. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainties with it. And you know, I think that's just a general thing of life. But, mm-hmm. I don't know. I think. You know, for me, just cowardice. Not just not acting on enough things. Not doing enough things. Not saying mm-hmm. what you want when you should.
Well, I mean, what you're saying is interesting because we had a conversation earlier about sloth
mm-hmm.
and how, you know, sloth in some ways is just another term for depression or,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
and as you're describing cowardice, it sounds like you're attaching that to sort of a condition of uncertainty in living.
Oh,
so
yeah.
in a way, there's kind of a nuance to the idea of vice as you're depicting it because
mm-hmm.
it's responding to like realities of our world that make us behave in ways that are not so.
Oh definitely. I mean, I'm simplifying things by just giving each one of these one vice or virtue as the title. I mean, I think, you know, with deceit, it could be deceit and envy. I mean, there's so many things that are coupled. I mean, it's not, generally when we experience an emotion, it's not just one thing. It's a lot of things. You have anger, you have jealousy, you have all these other emotions that are mixed in with it. That make it a lot more, you know, a lot richer, you know, good or bad. I mean, we all go through the same exact stuff. So, I just tend to nitpick myself to death on every little thing. So, you know, that's kind of why I end up being the coward. You know, I don't see everybody else in the world as cowards. I actually do. I mean, I think, you know, sloth would be a little bit more appropriate for the way I see the rest of it. The world sometimes in not acting on the way they could or should to mm-hmm. to help others. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'd call it cowardice in others. I don't know what they're thinking. So I think I'm the only one I can actually apply that to. So.
Well, should we talk a little bit about the format? Because it's sort of a novel format and. I guess we can describe it. It sort of, for me, hovers between painting and sculpture. And when I think of your other works, it seems like you actually have sort of a record of pushing painting in a sculptural direction in terms of the supports that you use to make work. So perhaps you could talk a little bit about that.
I think it's because I'm just jealous of sculptors. All my friends are sculptors, so I'm just jealous. Now, this format in particular, I think, came, you know, just because I've seen so many, like, you know, old master drawings. I think there's the Da Vinci painting at the National Gallery. They lend themselves to just more exploration, and a little more content, you know, just a little extra peek into what's being depicted here. You can show something, and then you have to make people think just for that extended period where they have to go around and see the other side. I found a lot of people, at the opening, I found there were a lot of people that just couldn't make that connection, and it kind of made me a little sad. I mean, I knew some of these people and that they didn't even want to make that connection. I like people to actually do a little work, to actually have to think a little bit when they're looking at my stuff. And so I think that kind of helps with that. I do like to kind of go into that three-dimensional space a little bit more, because, I mean, even the regular paintings I do, I build them up
right.
in almost block forms, so they pop out from the wall a little bit more. Just because I find so much of the time you can pass by paintings fairly easily, I think. Without really needing to look at them, unless you come in straight at it and see it, you can just walk by a painting. I mean, if you're approaching from the side, you know, glare might get in your way, you might not see the thing, and it's not that important to you. So I like that. I mean, like Sean Scully's stuff a long time ago, I don't think they're the most beautiful compositions in the world every time, but there's something about, like, the multi-layers, the levels to them that I always enjoyed that. I mean, he doesn't do it every time, but I saw some of his stuff, like, when I was an undergrad, and I really liked that. So I think I've always kind of liked that multi-layer approach to things, just even if it's two-dimensional, getting some depth out of it. And I also just thought it was kind of an opportune way to display the vice and the virtue at the same time together, couple them. I think if I had done these just one-sided images, I probably wouldn't have chosen the same six. But I, you know, I don't. I think I would have done five out of the six. But who knows?
What's interesting too. I mean, what you're talking about, sort of forcing people to do some work, like physically do some work, walking around the objects. And the figures are pretty much life size scale, I would say. And the sort of I don't know if you're comfortable with me using the word, sort of the moralistic message of the pieces, that, you know, we sort of need to examine ourselves and our world for how these vices and virtues fit into it. I mean, it kind of makes sense that it would all be on a human scale. And that,
yeah, that's a lot more confrontational that way. That's what I do like. I mean, I like that, you know, most of them, their heads, their faces are almost eye level. So you do have to look them in the eye. You have to be right there with them. I thought it was just kind of odd because, like, during the opening, it was just filled in here, and they kind of got lost with all the people. In a way, I liked it. In a way, I didn't like it because, you know, I don't know if you could really appreciate it as well, but it's, you know, I do want it to kind of be, I want it to be confrontational in a way. I mean, the small image stuff I do, I think it's almost illustrative. It's kind of cute to some people. You know, you can separate yourself from that. The really big scale images I've done, it can be a little overwhelming, and you don't have that connection. But I think the scale, the size, you do have to kind of face them a little bit more.
Well, I think the other thing that it does mean, and this is where sculpture kind of permeates the content of your work as well as the format of it, is that it makes these figures sort of comparable to statues of classical antiquity, and sort of connects maybe, you know, the poses and the nudity to those kinds of images from past. Most of the figures, except cowardice, which is interesting, are situated on bases of some kind. Mm-hmm. And then it also seems that you're sort of sculpting the figures in terms of the garments that they're wearing and how they, you know, affect the the disposition of the body. So, observations.
Oh yeah, okay. I mean, I think about everything that's going on in them. I mean, I tried to, from side to side, I tried to kind of consider what elements were going into it. Yeah, you're right, that cowardice doesn't have anything. He's also the only one with such a dark, neutral background. It may seem a little gimmicky, but I just wanted him to stand out a little bit more. Maybe if in a negative way, that it's not as appealing. You know, the rest of them, the platforms they're on, kind of further support. I think with like the little grass circles that mm-hmm. some of them are on. I have this kind of ongoing narrative between like the little paintings and these that like the pretty figures, the virtuous, the figures that think they're virtuous. They like to slaughter animals and cover themselves in their fur, and they like to cut down trees and kill plants and all the other stuff to make their surroundings match their beauty. So at least that's what I think in my mind. So that's mm-hmm. what I do in the paintings. So you know, the bases, you know, the pedestals, the pillow, all go to support, you know, that side of them, this kind of egotistical side, the ham of virtue I need to be built up more. Mm-hmm. I don't look at these as somebody else set them up in these poses. They're doing it. They're posing for us. That's why I think on the vice side of things, they're generally not so happy looking. You know? It's more like, okay, just take the picture. I don't want to be seen. So.
Well, you mentioned picture, so that leads me into another area that I was hoping we could discuss, which is how you actually sort of represent the figure. I mean, how do you get from sort of what's in your mind to what's painted? And I know that you use models and that you do take photos of the models, and I was just wondering if you could explain the process a bit more.
Well, like on small scale stuff, I just make that up all in my head, and I do sketches like those, you know, just to come up with the ideas, and then for the large, anything larger, you know, I need anatomy right on those. I mean, it stands out so obviously if you don't have anatomy, at least somewhere in the right vicinity. It would also take forever just to make it all up out of my head and get anywhere near right. So, yeah, I mean, I hire models. I use photographs of the models just because most of the poses that I choose are not anything anybody would want to hold. I think I kind of, the girl with the milk, Cherry, I think, just that, I it was cold milk, and she couldn't hold that against her skin for, you know, even like the 30 seconds at a time she had to. So, you know, I also maybe, I'm too introverted and I don't want to be around people that long, so maybe that's why I go with the photographs. But once I do the photographs, I take the photographs and do drawings of them, and just enlarge my drawings, start from there. So.
And when you ask the model to take a difficult pose, I mean, does that kind of help your thinking about how you're going to represent it? I mean, if someone's sort of contorted and struggling to hold a pose, does that then influence sort of the way that you're depicting discomfort in your images?
Oh yeah, definitely. It can certainly help. And then sometimes if you want somebody to look natural and not pained in any way, it's bad when they can't do that, when they can't be natural. I think that's the tougher thing, when you want beauty and somebody can't give that to you. And I know, and I'm not talking physical beauty, I'm just talking like holding themselves in a confident way. If they can't do that, that's sometimes difficult. I think from the series, I think I found that hiring models is my least favorite thing to do. Just because finding good ones is really tough. I mean, I went through a lot of models, and some of them I had some difficulty with. Some of them, they worked well, but they maybe couldn't get the exact right pose. A few of them I found were great. Using myself, come on, I can't beat that.
No, not at all.
I don't have to pay myself. It just took like a couple hours.
Well, do you have a preference in terms of, I mean, given the difficulties of working with models, do you have a preference in terms of making large-scale work where you feel the model is necessary and the smaller work which is more invented?
You know, I don't think I could do any one continuously. You know, if I had to just do one the rest of my life, I'd be bored out of my skull. I like doing the larger-scale stuff just because, you know, if I didn't do any large-scale stuff, if I didn't do any life drawing or, you know, fortunately in my classes I teach, I do life drawing, so I get practice. But if I didn't, I'd forget anatomy, and I forget enough as it is, but for the small-scale stuff. So I kind of need to do it, and I like to do it just for that. But it's also, it's a different challenge. The small-scale stuff, it's a little formulaic for me, which could be a bad thing, and I try to improve it every time. I look at small scale paintings I did, you know, 10 years ago or 5 years ago and 2 years ago, and I think I'm getting much more detailed each time. So it's taking me a lot longer, but that's what I want. That's kind of what I need to see. The large scale stuff, it appeals to me in a much different way. I think I enjoy doing it very loosely, like the really large scale stuff I've done. I like seeing a lot of brush strokes, I like seeing a lot of, you know, just marks. And small scale stuff, you can't really see all that all the time.
So, well, I mean, so in a way, it kind of sounds like these are more painterly for you as well as being more sculptural, or is that not true?
In some ways they are, in some ways I tighten up a lot more than I'd like. You know, it's a balance that I still struggle with, you know, trying to find out, you know, trying to find how much of a brushstroke I want to leave because that's appealing to me, or do I want to blend away this area and get a nice smooth transition? You know, it's in some of them, like the one of me, I think I left a lot more brushstrokes evident, where on the reverse side, I think I smooth things away a lot more. So, you know, it's odd because I think it actually works a little better that way. I think generally with the virtue side, things are a little more smoothed out. So I did do it intentionally that way. The vice side, it's a little choppier, a little grittier. I like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Sure. That's good. So I guess the final topic, which would be outside influences. And I mean, I know that you teach a lot, mm-hmm. and you also travel. So I would say, you know, ask as a starting point, does your teaching and your travels feed the paintings in a way?
Well, I mean, I teach over at Catholic university. I don't know if anybody knows that, but so I'll say it. And they actually asked me to teach a class on a studio class that had a religious component to it. You know, so I actually had to look up a lot of information. I thought, all right, I'm not religious. I don't know why they really asked me, but they did. The only religion I've got in me is just this vice and virtue stuff. It appeals to me in artwork, any kind of artwork. So, you know, I had to read a lot about it. So there was a lot of stuff I've observed in traveling and everything else in terms of vice and virtue. I've seen it and I like it. It appeals to me. But then having to read a lot about it, and actually know the history of it, know why most of our virtues are females, because there's a poem written about the vices and virtues, a war between them. And it was written in Latin, and all your nouns in Latin are feminine, or most of them. So that's why when you're writing just about charity, it's a woman, because it's a feminine noun. They just assumed these are women. So it's just fun knowing things like that. I didn't stick to those kind of things. I didn't feel like I had to follow every little thing about that, but you know, the classes helped. But I mean, I try to travel as often as I can. And, I think when I do travel, all I do is look at art and I try to absorb as much as I can and take it, manipulate it, make it my own, incorporate anything from any images. It's fun to do that. I think when I don't get to do that enough, I just get tired. Being in studio, because it's, you know, not that I don't like a lot of contemporary artwork, I do. I just, it's tougher to kind of incorporate it into what appeals to me in my own. Not that I don't, I mean, I think it does happen, but not as readily as with, you know, Renaissance art or Northern European Renaissance art. Especially that stuff just really kind of motivates me a lot more. Mm-hmm. So that's, those kind of influences I think are the strongest things. I mean, I also, you know, anything off the news can affect me and make me want to make something. I'll get inspiration from anything. Mm-hmm. But those are the major things.
So do you want to give us a preview of what's coming next or what you're thinking about now?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a continuation of the small figure stuff. It's, I'm just doing a very large scale image, kind of it's continuing the narrative. For me right now, it's more about a narrative than it's ever been. I almost want to, you know, make a book out of it just for myself, because I want to put it all in order. I'm not doing all the images in order, but they do have a timeline in my mind. And part of me would just like love to see this battle between the pretty and the ugly. You know, in some of them, the vices and virtues, the symbols that I'm putting with them, they're much more obvious. Some of them are not. And it's simply just, you know, brutality of one side versus the other. And it's just awkward, weird little vignettes that I like, but I'm doing like I keep calling it a war painting, but it's more like a revolution, a little revolt. Revolution sounds too big. Revolt, how about that? Of the ugly figures against the pretty ones. So yeah, it's just kind of continuing the narrative, but you know, back with the small scale stuff for a little while, just because I miss it. I haven't been able to do it enough, so.
Well, sounds good. Look forward to seeing it, and thanks for talking to me.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for being here, Kristen.
Eric Sandberg's show is on view until October 28, 2006. For further information and images of Eric's work, please check out our website at www.connercontemporary.com.